a few months later, Matthew decided to go take another job and be a software developer. And so he brought Cliff in, who was working at Whole Earth already too. Now, Cliff had lived at the farm. I knew Cliff just as well as I knew Matthew. And I had lived with Cliff in Washington, D.C. I knew him really well. We had already been through this experience that you can develop deep relationships with people that you didn't really know and take that journey with people and then discover what it held for you as you went along. We had lived together and went on this road trip, and then we settled on this land. We settled in land that was far away from where we had started. It's not that you couldn't leave, but after making that much of a commitment, most of us didn't want to leave. All relationships have conflict in them. If you avoid conflict, at some point, conflict will visit you when you don't want it, and you won't have a way to deal with it. But if you have conflict with people and you find ways to resolve that conflict, or to at least come to an understanding that lets you continue so that you don't have this bad feeling, that is part of what makes relationships really strong, because you have that. And so we had this working knowledge of the benefit that comes to you if you stay with it and take that journey that also includes conflict. And you're not going to easily resolve all your conflicts. Some of them, you might just agree to differ. But to any amount that you can resolve it, you're going to be made stronger. So here we were now with all of these people in an online environment who were only using their computers to talk to each other. And it was obvious that real feeling and real emotion was traveling through this stuff. Even though you're looking at sometimes green letters on a black screen, you were feeling powerful emotions. You were feeling love and anger, all of these things. When everybody is volunteering their remarks and you're not even in the same room or talking at the same time, but you're sitting in your own room and you're comfortable, you're sitting in your power spot, somebody's insulting you, or somebody's saying something you don't agree with and you don't like it, you know. So it's like, well, I'm gonna write back to you, and I'm gonna give you a piece of my mind. I think everybody who spends much time online in discussions understands that it's really easy to fall into conflict, and it's not easy at all. In fact, it's very hard to resolve those conflicts. And in the online environment, it's very difficult. We had real names, and that helped. And we also met face-to-face. We had parties together. Every once a month, we had a party at our office. We would invite people because it was fun and because it benefited the relationship building. Everybody could see that, and it was a good thing to do. And they started small, and they got bigger. And when you're physically together, you have facial expression. You have your body position. You have whether you are really tense or not. There is vocal tone. So suppose you're just being ironic. Suppose you're just being sarcastic. Suppose whatever you wrote was your best approximation of what you were really thinking at the time, and or whatever it is you put out there, and then on the receiving end is somebody, maybe they understand what you're saying, maybe they don't. It's so easy to misunderstand. It's like threading a needle if you're going to have perfect understanding, and it works the best if everybody knows that and you're ready for it. You're going to do your best, but when you're on the receiving end of this stuff, I would say try to oversupply the understanding, what we say, cutting slack. Assume that they're really trying to convey to you what they mean, and you're going to do your best to understand it. And so if everybody's really trying, it really helps.
So did you talk about it? I mean, from what I know, there were problems that people were having debates with each other.
Sure.
Was your job to talk about the way you're communicating in the system, or did you talk at your meetings about it? Or
yes, all of the above. We would have conversations about the conversations. You had the public discussions, and then you could always email somebody. You could always have a private, real-time, little instant message thing going with somebody. I mean, some people like conflict. It's entertaining. It gets the blood going. And certainly when there are political discussions and things like that, I mean, very few people talked somebody else out of their position, you know. So there was all this kind of debating going on. There was this guy, for example, who was a very strong believer that circumcising an infant was like an act of torture. He was very opposed to it. And so he liked to have debates about that. And he wouldn't allow people to believe that circumcising their son was not only an important ritual, but was actually a good thing. He just would never let it go, ever. So he was happy and willing to argue that point to the end of time. He didn't care. And that's just one example. People who liked conflict, they found it entertaining, they found it stimulating. If you would keep it going with them, it was like playing tennis. They would just hit the ball back, hit the ball back, hit the ball back, and they would just keep going. And then there were other people who didn't want to do that. The Well, every one of these conferences had a host, had a volunteer who was looking after it. And so there was a special place for the host to talk. These hosts were volunteers that they were given free access to the system in exchange for their hosting. And so they would have a special private conference where we would talk policy and stuff. And a lot of those arguments got very heated. My job, I figured the way this thing's going to grow is to have the knowledge sharing and the relationships be so beneficial and powerful to the people using it that they would just go out and tell the people they knew and say, hey, you got to try this. This is so great. Come on. And that did happen a lot. So I was very blessed because I was basically free to pursue this as best I could. And I just lived online. I'd be on it all day long. A lot of what I did was help people develop these bonds, not by guiding them through, but sometimes it was just simply helping them develop for themselves this knowledge that the benefits are worth taking the journey. We had this sense of how weird and bad it has to get before you really have to just give up and leave, because we had to get each other down the highway and our bus would break down. And we had, you know, we were out in the country or out in the cities. We had to interact with the police, a bunch of long-haired hippies driving around the Midwest of America. The police did not like us. And so we had to agree on how we were going to act. And we had to get along. It couldn't be fake. We couldn't be in conflict with ourselves very much. We had to work these things out. And so we just learned that things can get really, really difficult and you still don't have to quit. Cliff and I constantly encouraged people to see something good in the other person and try to let those things grow. So it was very conscious of trying to have a positive feeling and a positive outlook without telling anybody what to do, because those people did not want to be told what to do. They didn't want to be managed, right? And so that this whole, I'm a community manager, that's the term now, and I am the first person who was an online community manager as a job, but that was not my title. I was conference manager because that sort of suggested that there was administrative work involved in it. But these highly individual, some of them pretty high achieving, all of them quite accomplished in their way, people, they didn't want to be managed. So it wasn't like that. But it was just this constant trying to have an atmosphere. I mean, that's what's so fascinating about it. These are these little electronic boxes connected through a wire that goes to some machine somewhere, but it's hooked up to a bunch of people who aren't even, in most cases, meeting in real time, although some are, and it has atmosphere. How can this be? We had come out of the psychedelic 1960s where the idea of vibes, vibrations between people, good vibes, bad vibes. This was not just a word or a concept. It was a daily operational reality. So how can this be? It's like in the middle of this electronic thing. It was magical. Sometimes I couldn't believe my good fortune, honestly, that I had landed in the middle of this. It was beautiful.
And how can I imagine how you used it? You had your computers at home and you had a telephone line.
Yeah, you had your computer at home, you had a telephone line. It would display text on a screen, and in the early days, in the mid-80s, what they called the baud rate, the sort of standard at first was 1,200 baud. 1,200 baud means that it's going to show up line by line. Unless you're a really fast reader, it's going to scroll just a little bit faster than you can read it, but not by much. It's slow. There was no graphics. The whole screen wouldn't appear all at once. It didn't behave like a web page. It would be line of text, line of text, line of text. And then later in the 80s, the speed got more commonly at 2400. That meant that it could go bip, 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 you know, the lines would show up really fast. And then into the 90s, it grew to like 5,600. Then you started getting to where you could sort of see a whole screen at once, you know, that kind of stuff. But it was slow, you know, and it was slow and it was all words. But that was the leading edge of technology at the time, the discovery that relationships can develop through this technology that are every bit as deep and every bit as meaningful as if you were in the same physical space together. Not that they would necessarily. It wasn't a given, but it could. And in many cases, it did. And so you've got a bunch of people where not only had never happened to them through technology, it hadn't happened to them much at all. They weren't loners, really. They just hadn't found their tribe, so to speak. And so what started happening was that the people using it themselves saw themselves as a community. They believed it for themselves. And that was the word they used to describe it. It was really powerful, really a powerful experience. A lot of those relationships are stronger now than they ever were. And you know, people started having get-togethers of their own. There's a bunch of people who mostly live in the East Bay who are musicians and singers, and they like to get together. And they started these gatherings where, you know, bring your guitar or whatever, and we'll have a sing-along. And they call it a sing-thing. And they started doing this on a fairly regular basis, you know, a few times a year. And they still do it.